Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? By Andy Ride or Die. Read to you by Be Brave 13. A Stranger Things spoiler fic. Summary. Nobody expects it to be Mike. Everyone is expecting it to be Max or Nancy, who've both already been targeted. Or maybe Elle, whose childhood in Hawkins' lab makes her the perfect target, or Will, who's gone through more than enough trauma in the past 3 years alone for all of them. Nobody expects it to be Mike. Or the one in which it's Mike, not Will, who Vecna targets. Author's notes. Someone stop me because I can't focus on anything except for Stranger Things, and that's mildly a problem because I'm a whole ass adult with a job. LOL. Hi, yes, I know this is my third Stranger Things fic this week alone. They're all just kind of getting thrown together, and this story is wholly unedited, so it may be a little out of character. But I've seen a lot of the fics and theories that Will is going to get Vecna'd, and I thought it'd be fun to try something different. This is my attempt at trying to understand Mike's headspace and why he's pulling away from Will and Elle in season 4. I think Mike's such an interesting character, and I relate a lot to Mike, in the earlier seasons especially, so I tried to draw on some of my own experiences with withdrawing from friends, even while still physically being present, and what it feels like to not even fully understand why. I hope you all enjoy. I've been the prey, screaming, who could ever leave me, darling? But who could stay? November 9th, 1985. Dear Will. No. Will. No. Hey, Will. It's Mike. How's it going in California? Things are okay here in Hawkins. Everyone is trying to go back to normal, whatever the hell that is. But it's different. It's weird not having you or Elle around. It's like, everywhere I turn, I expect to see you. Mrs. Stokes, that new history teacher, remember? Told us to get into pairs for a project, and I almost turn around to pair up with you. Then I remembered, you're not here. Shit, this makes it sound like you're dead or something. This is stupid. I don't even know why I'm doing this. Fuck, I didn't mean that. Damn it. Let me try this again. Hey, Will. It's me, Mike. I thought we could be pen pals or something. You know, when I'm not stealing Cerebro from Dustin to try to talk to you and Elle. He's annoyingly protective over it. So his girlfriend saved the world once and he thinks she's so great. Ugh. And Nancy's busy hogging the phone with your brother, which means that's out of the question. So, pen pals it is then? God, why is this so awkward? Things are different in Hawkins. I mean, they were different when you were still there, but it's worse now. I guess everyone's still just processing what happened this summer. Hell, what's happened over the past few years? I know I still am. And I get the feeling you are too. We've been through a lot. And I don't know what to do with all that. Sometimes I feel a little stupid for being so messed up over this. It's like, it could have gone worse, right? I'm not the one who was stuck in the upside down, like you. I didn't grow up being experimented on in a lab, like Elle. I haven't lost anyone, like Max and Elle. But I still feel like shit. I'm still scared all the time, and I feel so damn angry that all of this has happened to us. To you and everyone else. It's not fair, and it fucking sucks. All of this fucking sucks. I don't know what to do anymore. Maybe I should talk to someone about all this. But honestly, You're the only person I feel like I can tell this stuff to. Please don't tell Elle. Listen, Will. About everything. I want you to know that I'm sorry. For how I treated you. You've been through so much shit, and it's not fair. And I've been a shitty best friend on top of all of that. I don't even know why. Because the truth is, you mean so much to me, and, fuck. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I really, really don't, and I just...
Mike!
The sound of his mother's voice breaks Mike's concentration, and he groans, running a hand through his hair.
What, Mom?
He shouts, hoping she can hear him all the way upstairs.
Dinner's ready!
Comes his mother's reply, and, well, so much for finishing his letter to Will before school in the morning. The hope had been to finish writing his letter tonight so he could drop both Will and Elle's cards off at the post office on his way to school, but at this rate, there's no way Mike will be able to finish Will's letter. Something inside his chest twists a bit painfully, maybe out of guilt or even a little bit of relief, and honestly, Mike isn't sure what to make of that. But Will will understand. He always does, and Mike will get a letter written to him eventually. The letter he has written right now was stupid, anyways. The last thing Will needs is to hear about how shitty Mike feels nowadays. No, he's supposed to be apologizing to Will so that things can just feel normal again and can go back to the way they used to be. He just has to find the right words to say. The words will come to him. They always do. So, with a sigh, Mike stands and runs upstairs, nearly colliding with his sister on the way to the dining room table.
Mike!
Nancy exclaims, an exasperated look on her face. Her curly hair is a bit of a frizzy mess, and there are dark circles under her eyes as if she hasn't slept well the past few days.
Probably up too late talking to Jonathan.
Mike can't help but think bitterly, and he rolls his eyes.
Sorry,
he mutters under his breath, walking to the table. Nancy huffs, following after him.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing, Mike retorts. What's wrong with you? His sister just glares at him, and for a moment it's like they're back in 1983. Back before all this shit and the mess of the Upside Down, when their worst problems were school bullies and annoying siblings. Back before they had the shared, and really fucking terrible, experience of fighting for their lives against monsters and nearly losing their friends and each other. Back before the two of them remembered that they really do love and care for one another. But that moment disappears as quickly as it comes, and Nancy's rage seems to deflate like a balloon. Her eyes soften as they sit across from each other at the table.
I miss them too,
she says, her voice careful. It's a peace offering, an olive branch, common ground. Mike could take it. Could confess to his big sister that he doesn't just miss their friends, but that, quite frankly, Mike isn't sure what to do with himself without Elle. Without Will. Nancy, of all people, would get it. She probably misses Jonathan just as much. But Mike is too tired to think about any of that, or to have some deep, meaningful conversation with Nancy. Maybe she'd get it, but then again, maybe she wouldn't. She's only known Jonathan for a couple years. Mike's known Will for nearly 10. So, Mike just shrugs, and he takes his seat.
We'll see them over Christmas break, he mumbles, glancing in the direction of their mom.
She merely purses her lips. After all, they haven't quite convinced her to let them visit California in December. But she'll come around. She has to. Mike's really not sure what he'll do if she doesn't. December 1st, 1985. His mom doesn't come around. See, the thing is, she still wants to pretend that there's some big, happy family and that everything is fucking perfect in the Wheeler household. She still wants to keep up the image that their lives are great and that Ted and Karen Wheeler have three beautiful, perfect children whom they love and care for. Maybe Mike is just a moody teenager, but he thinks it's bullshit.
It's bullshit, because he knows that both he and Nancy have disappeared for days on end without either of their parents even realizing. It's not like they even have a sibling to cover for them, the way Erica sometimes covers for Lucas. Holly's still too little to get involved with their messes. Oh no, this is all the wonderful parenting of Ted and Karen Wheeler, who are either too fucking oblivious to notice their kids' absences, or who just don't fucking care. But hey, Nancy and Mike have to be around for Christmas, because Christmas is for family, not for boyfriends and girlfriends. Never mind the fact that Will and Elle and even Jonathan and Mrs. Byers have seen the worst parts of Mike and have been through hell and back with him. Or the fact that for years now, Mike has felt more at home in the Byers house than he has in his own home. As far as Mike is concerned, they're just as much a part of his family as his parents and his sisters. It all comes to blows one evening in early December. Mike tries again, a last-ditch effort to convince his parents to let him go. The answer is still the same, and though he argues until he's practically blue in the face, it does nothing. In fact, it works against him, because now he's grounded and his allowance is taken away for the next 2 weeks. Which means no phone time with Elle, and no extra money to buy Will that comic book Mike has been eyeing for the past few weeks. The universe really, really just fucking hates him this year. As soon as he's allowed to, Mike storms back to his room and slams the door shut, hoping his parents take the hint to leave him the hell alone for the rest of the night. There are too many anxious and angry thoughts swirling around in his head, and Mike's not sure if he wants to scream or cry or throw something or maybe all of the above. All he knows is that none of this is fair, and he misses his girlfriend and his best friend so much that it hurts. He wishes that everything's just normal and he would stop feeling like this, like there's something missing, and like he doesn't even know how to be himself anymore. He misses how things used to be because, God, everything is so fucked up right now, and Mike is so fucked up right now, and it's all just one big fucking mess. If Will were here, he'd know what to do. He's always the person that Mike goes to when his parents are difficult, or when Mike feels like shit about himself, or when life is just really, really hard. Will's just Will. There's always been something about him that has made Mike feel completely at ease, even on the worst days. Not anymore, Mike thinks, and he can't help but glance at the pile of half-written letters on his desk. Dear Will. Hi, Will. Will, guess what? I miss you, Will. Like, really miss you. What a shitty person he is, unable to even send a fucking letter to the person he calls his best friend. And it's not for the lack of wanting to talk to Will. Oh no, there are some days where Mike thinks he might miss Will even more than he misses Elle. Is he allowed to say that? But Mike knows. He knows if he talks to Will, if he even begins to open up to Will, then he's just not going to be able to stop. Every ugly, confusing, terrifying thought inside his brain is going to spill right out of him because it's Will, and Mike has never, ever been able to lie to Will. Even if he tries to, Will has always been able to see right through him. But it's not like you have anything to hide. That anxious voice in the back of his mind argues. Or do you? Of course not, Mike thinks. What would I be hiding? It's a question Mike isn't sure he has the answer to. For the longest time, the anxious thoughts swirl inside Mike's head, and he closes his eyes tightly, fighting back the tears that sting his eyes. This is stupid. It's all so stupid. He should be fine. Yeah, things are different now, and this year's been a goddamn awful mess, but he should be fine. And maybe if he keeps pretending that things are fine, eventually they actually will be. So, with a shuddered breath, Mike reaches for the closest cassette and puts it in his stereo. Better to drown out the anxious thoughts with music. It'll help him to not think about everything that's happened and how he misses Elle and Will and about how different everything has become. As if by some stroke of fate, the familiar chords of Will Byers' favorite song begin to fill the silence of Mike's room. Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Do, 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 do.
Something inside Mike's chest twists again. Part of him wants to turn off the song, but he can't bring himself to. Instead, he lies on his bed and stares up at the ceiling, letting himself get lost in the song and in all the good memories that come with it. January 13th, 1986. Christmas comes and goes, and suddenly Mike is halfway done with his freshman year of high school. Yay. Everyone always says, things will get better, except they haven't. In fact, they've gotten worse, because not only are Will and Elle on the other side of the country, but Lucas is also on the basketball team, and Max will barely look at any of them. Whatever. So what? The party has started to break up. What did he expect? He said it to Will just this past summer. Did they expect to be kids forever? Did they just expect for things to stay the same forever? All this change has Mike longing for a fucking do-over. Had he known what high school would bring, losing his best friends and his girlfriend all to life's changes and to growing up, he would have done so many things differently. He would have spent more time with the party, not just Elle. He wouldn't have been such a jackass to his friends, to Will. Mike wants a do-over, or at least some chance for things to return to normal, but he gets the feeling that nothing will ever be the same again. On the plus side, Dustin remains his normal self, and God, Mike latches onto the last vestiges of that normalcy by spending as much time as he can with Dustin. Luckily, his best friend doesn't seem to mind. After all, they're in this together. They're both in long-distance relationships. They're both awkward and nerdy, unlike Lucas, apparently. They're both still the outsiders whose only friends are the other members of the Hellfire Club. Everything still sucks, but at least Dustin doesn't. Things don't really get much better at home, either. At the very least, his mom and dad agree to let him visit California on spring break, so long as Mike behaves and agrees to cut his allowance in half to help pay for the trip. It's a fair trade, so Mike wisely stops picking fights with his parents and just tries to keep to himself. His mom asks a lot of questions, clearly picking up on his newfound attitude and propensity to isolate from everyone but a select few people. She tries to help, but honestly, Mike doesn't want to hear any of it. All he cares about is the fact that it'll be March before he knows it. He just has to make it to March. Because that'll fix it, right? Maybe things won't totally be back to normal, but in March, he'll get to see Elle and Will and spend time with them. He'll get to set things right with Will and catch up on the last few months. And of course, he'll get to be around Elle, which is always a good time. And maybe then, Mike will start feeling like himself again. As soon as his parents book the flight to California, Mike rushes up to his room and grabs his notebook and a pen. It's taken him about 3 months to do it, but he finally manages to send a letter to Will and Elle. Close enough, right? He just wants to tell them both so badly about his trip to California, and writing two letters feels a little pointless. For once, the words come easily.
Guess what? It's Mike, by the way. But I finally convinced my parents to let me come see you. My spring break starts on March 21st, so my mom talked to your mom, and they worked it out for me to come visit for the whole week. I don't know how I managed to convince my parents. We fought a lot about the failed Christmas break trip, so I guess they felt bad or something like that. But seriously, an entire week out in sunny California is gonna be the best. I wanna do everything, see everything, like the beach or Disney or Hollywood or whatever weird shit California has. I don't even know if you live close to the beach, or Disney, or Hollywood. I don't care. I'm just excited to see you. I miss you. Hawkins is just different now. I thought maybe I'd be used to it by now, but no such luck. Everything's changed, and it sucks, and I hate it. I hate that you aren't here. I hate that things have changed so much. Maybe I can convince Mrs. Byers to adopt me too, so I don't have to leave. I'm sure Dustin would forgive me, eventually, for ditching him, right? Anyways, I'm writing this really quickly because I'm supposed to be meeting Dustin for a school project, so sorry it's short, but I promise I'll write more and call you soon. Love, Mike.
With With a smile, Mike folds up the piece of paper and quickly stuffs it into an envelope. According to his clock, he's already 5 minutes late to the time he was supposed to meet Dustin, so Mike quickly scribbles down an address onto the envelope.
Will Byers, 4819 Lonzo Way, Nora Hills, California, 93249.
There. Will and Elle will get the letter that's for both of them, right? Obviously, Mike is coming to visit them both. It's just easier to fit one name on the letter. Now, he just needs to find a stamp and he'll be good to go. Mike! Comes an exasperated voice from behind him, and Mike turns around to see Nancy standing in the doorway, her arms crossed. Can you please turn your music down?
Classic Nancy.
Sorry, Mike says absently, but he presses the stop button on the stereo regardless. Nancy gives him an amused look. It's fine, she reassures, then raises a brow. I didn't know you listened to The Clash. I don't really, Mike shrugs, grabbing his letter and walking to the door. Yeah, right, Nancy scoffs. You've been playing that song nonstop for the past month. Honestly, you're worse than Jonathan, and he loves that song.
So does Will, Mike thinks in the back of his head, but he doesn't say anything.
Instead, he just shrugs again.
I didn't know that, he lies as he walks past his sister. It's a good song.
Nancy doesn't look entirely convinced, but to Mike's luck, she's willing to let it go.
Yeah, she agrees. It is. Just do me a favor and keep it down when you play music. You know I have to make calls for the newspaper sometimes, and it's hard to hear over all the noise.
Sorry, Nance. Mike apologizes quickly, and he does mean it. I'll be quieter, I promise. I gotta go, though. See you later. Bye. He's out the door before Nancy can get another word out, and it's only after Mike gets to Dustin's house that he realizes he never did grab a stamp for Will's letter. February 11th, 1986.
Will, it's Mike. Hey, I'm sorry for how this year's been. I've been an ass, and I know it. And I've been a terrible friend. Best friend. The truth is, you're the most important person in the world to me. And honestly, that's kind of terrifying. You know me better than anyone else does. You always have. And that's just really scary. Because there are things that I don't know. Things that I guess I'm just not ready to tell. And maybe that's why I haven't talked to you in so long. It's a shitty excuse, I know. But if these past few months have taught me anything, it's that I need you in my life. You're my best friend in the entire world, you know? And I don't know what I'd do without you. Things haven't been the same without you around. I haven't been the same without you around. I know I'm shit at saying it, and even worse at showing it. But I love you. You're my best friend, Will, and nothing's ever gonna change that. And honestly, the truth is...
Writing a letter to Elle? Mike flinches, and he quickly moves to cover up the letter, looking across the table at Dustin. Yeah, he lies. Who else? Dustin gives him a cheeky grin before moving to open up his carton of milk.
Ah, young love, he says. It is Valentine's Day this week, after all. I'm sure you're going all out to show Elle how much you love her.
Shit, 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 shit! How had he forgotten about Valentine's Day? Holy shit, Mike is screwed. He is so fucking screwed because it's Tuesday and Valentine's Day is on fucking Friday! Shit, 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 he's screwed. He's so screwed.
Dustin must notice Mike's panic because he narrows his eyes suspiciously.
You did remember that Valentine's Day was this week, right?
Mike hesitates.
I... obviously.
You hesitated.
I did not hesitate, Mike protests, and Dustin just groans.
Mike,
he sighs. It's Valentine's Day. That is the holiday of love, since you've clearly forgotten.
You can't just do nothing for Elle, even if she's all the way in California.
I'm going to do something for Elle, Mike snaps.
Oh yeah? Dustin challenges.
What?
Again, Mike hesitates, and he groans, dropping his head.
I'll make it up to her when I visit next month, he mutters, and add that to the list of things I need to make up for.
Said list also includes 1. Having exactly 3 phone calls with one Will Byers since he's moved away. 2. Sending exactly 1 letter to Will Byers since he's moved away. 3. Not getting Will Byers a Christmas gift. At least adding forgetting about Valentine's Day makes him not just a shitty best friend, but also a shitty boyfriend. Dustin just chuckles. Trouble in paradise, huh?
You could say that,
Mike sighs, and he reaches for the letter to Will, folding it up carefully and placing it into his backpack.
Guess I'm just having trouble figuring out what I want to say. Things are so different now.
What Dustin doesn't need to know is that things are actually fine with Elle. Great, even. She sends letters to Mike all the time, and Mike sends letters right back. It's great to hear from her, and Mike is so glad she's fitting in at her new school. He's glad that she's adjusting, and that she's happy. Elle deserves to be happy, even if he's not there with her. No. Dustin doesn't need to know that what Mike is really stressed over is his relationship, or lack thereof, with Will. Or how the two of them went from being inseparable best friends to practically strangers in the span of a year. Or how every single time Mike thinks about Will, his stomach gets all twisted into knots and his heart hurts because he misses Will, and he misses how things used to be with Will. Or how Mike can't figure out to fucking say any of this because even though there's so much he wants to say, he shouldn't say it. Because once he says those things, once he admits them to Will and to himself, there's no turning back. Dustin doesn't need to know how fucking terrified Mike is of change and losing his best friend in the entire world. Sure, maybe his friendship with Will is hanging on by a thread right now, but if Mike lets himself be honest and real for one moment, then that last little thread will be snipped right in two. And yeah, maybe existing in this limbo sucks, but at least here he can pretend like everything is fine. Like he's oblivious to how close he is to losing his best friend or how badly it would wreck him if he did actually lose Will. It's better to pretend like nothing is wrong.
Friends don't lie, a voice in the back of his head reminds.
It sounds vaguely like Elle, and somehow that just makes Mike feel even worse. He doesn't even want to go down that line of thinking. If he stops pretending, he's not just going to lose Will, but he's going to lose Elle too. Honestly, at this point, he probably deserves to lose them both, but Mike's too much of a fucking coward to do anything about it. He'll just keep breaking the party's number one rule, even if it's killing him inside.
I'm sure you'll figure out what to say eventually, Dustin reassures. You always do. And it's Elle. She'll be happy just to see you.
Yeah, Mike forces a smile.
You're probably right.
Thanks, Dustin.
His friend just gives him a bright smile in return.
Anyways, so I was thinking about a potential strategy for Hellfire this Friday.
March 21st, 1986. Mike's head is pounding. The past week has brought headache after headache, which is just really great timing. Of all the weeks to feel like shit, it has to be the week leading up to spring break, leading up to his trip to California. He feels like some sort of addict, popping pills left and right in a desperate attempt to just get his head to stop pounding, but nothing helps. But the headaches aren't even the worst part about the past week. No, by far, the worst part of this week has been the nightmares. Mike's no stranger to nightmares, really. At 14, almost 15 in a couple weeks, years old, he's already been through more shit than most adults can even begin to dream about. He's seen monsters from a whole other dimension come and rip people to shreds. He's been forced to run for his life from creatures hungry for his blood, and he's watched his friends and people he knows get hurt and even lose their lives in the process. Those kind of things can fuck a person up. He's had nightmares since he was 12 years old and first saw the police officers and firefighters drag a perfect replica of Will's body out of the quarry. Sure, sometimes the nightmares stop. When he's lulled into a false sense of safety and peace, the nightmares slow down. He'll go from having them nightly to once a week, to once a month, to once every few months, if he's lucky. Normally it takes something equally terrifying, like the reappearance of monsters from the Upside Down, to trigger the worst of his nightmares. But for some reason, some godforsaken reason, his nightmares have decided to make a reappearance this week. And they're all over the fucking place. He's back in the lab, hiding and terrified for his life with Hopper and Mrs. Byers and Owens and an unconscious Will and hoping that Bob will somehow make it to the computers. He's just a kid. God, he's just a kid. And his best friend is in danger and Mike can't do a single damn thing except try not to cry and hope he lives through this. He's at Hopper's cabin when the Mind Flayer finds them, and it grabs Elle's leg, and she's screaming, 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 and Mike is fucking powerless to do anything but watch. How many times does he have to watch her get hurt? Hasn't she been through enough? God, he wishes he could do something, anything to help her, but he's never able to protect her. He's at the quarry, hiding with Lucas, Dustin, and Elle behind a fire truck, and watching as a body is pulled out of the water. As Will's body is pulled out of the water. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real, Mike tells himself, because Will is alive. That's not Will. It's not Will. Still, he bikes away as fast as he can, and it sounds as if there's someone behind him, chuckling softly as Mike cries and cries the entire way home, because he's failed. Even though the party had tried so hard, even though Mike had tried so hard to find Will, Will's gone, and Mike couldn't protect him or find him or keep him safe. It's not real, Mike tries to tell himself again. It can't be real.
It is real.
A low, unfamiliar voice murmurs into the night.
Soon you will lose him and everyone else you love, Michael.
And in the background, Mike swears he can hear a faint over and over again in each of his dreams. Every night that week, he wakes up in a cold sweat and has to fight the urge to pick up the phone and call Elle and Will right then and there, just to make sure they're all right, they're alive. He never lets himself. It's silly to wake either of them up this late at night over a nightmare, something Mike knows for a fact that both Elle and Will struggle with themselves. No, he's fine. The nightmares will pass. They always do. Mike just has to make it through the rest of the day, then he's home free, ready for California in the morning. Simple enough. Except for the fact that Mike feels like he's dead on his feet all day on Friday, and he can barely concentrate in class. That faint tick-tock, tick-tock from his nightmares seems to follow him everywhere, and with how little sleep he's gotten this past week, he even begins to see things. It's just for a moment, but there's an old grandfather clock in the boy's bathroom. The tick-tock, tick-tock seems to get louder, and Mike swears he hears someone whisper,
"Soon, Michael, you will lose him. You will lose them all. It's what you deserve."
But there's no one else in the bathroom, and there's no grandfather clock anywhere to be found. So Mike splashes some water on his face and somehow manages to make it through the rest of the day. He gets home right at 9 p.m. and goes straight to bed, utterly exhausted. His head is spinning and all he wants is to rest. The nightmares return, and the night before Mike leaves for California is one of fitful sleep, strangled cries, and the reliving of every horrible memory from the past few years. He feels like a zombie on his feet when he wakes up, but he still puts on his tacky, bright clothes that he bought specifically for this trip. Nightmares or not, Mike is determined to make the most of these next few days. It'll all be worth it once he's in California. He's just gotta make it to California. And in the rush to grab his things and hurry to the airport, Mike doesn't notice the small stain of blood on his pillow. And he definitely doesn't remember waking up with blood dripping out of his nose in the middle of the night. March 28th, 1986. Nobody expects it to be Mike. Everyone is expecting it to be Max or Nancy, who have both already been targeted. Or maybe Elle, whose childhood in Hawkins' lab makes her the perfect target. Or Will, who has gone through more than enough trauma in the past 3 years alone for all of them. Nobody expects it to be Mike. Hell, Mike doesn't expect it to be Mike. Honestly, the headaches and nightmares of the previous week are but a distant memory. He hasn't had one since leaving Hawkins last week, and though things had very quickly gone to hell over spring break, Mike has felt happier these past few days than he has the past several months. He feels more like himself, less angry and less confused. He feels happy again. He feels a little guilty, too, because he shouldn't be laughing in the back of the van with Will when Elle is in danger or when all of their friends and family are in danger. But Mike can't help himself. He's done his fair share of sulking and worrying throughout their little road trip. He's allowed to laugh and enjoy time with his best friend. Kind of crazy how it takes the end of the world again for Mike to fix his broken mess of a friendship with Will, but Mike's never done anything the easy way. Amidst all the chaos of this crazy California road trip, Mike had honestly forgotten about his headaches and his nightmares. He doesn't pay much attention when Max carefully pulls both Elle and Will aside to talk about her symptoms. No, he's too busy checking in to make sure Nancy is all right. And so, the realization hits just a little too late. They use Hopper's old cabin as a base of operations. Most of them are fugitives now, accused of harboring a suspected murderer, so they have to lay low. Very few people know about Hopper's cabin, and with the buyer's house no longer available to them, Hop's old cabin seems like the best place to set up shop and figure out a game plan. The problem with Hopper's cabin is that it's really not that big, and there are like a dozen people in their group now, so Mike quickly begins to feel a little claustrophobic. When there's a lull in the conversation, he sneaks out the front door and sits down on the steps, willing himself to just breathe. After a while, a familiar voice says, "Hey." And Mike glances up, offering his best friend a small smile. "Hey. It's pretty crowded in there," Will remarks, taking a seat next to Mike. "No kidding," Mike chuckles. "The adults aren't even here yet, and there's already a dozen of us." Will laughs softly, and he leans his head onto his hand. "It's weird being back," he admits. "Hearing about all these new people, trying to catch up with everyone, is a lot. Hawkins has always felt like home, but not so much anymore. It's like, I don't really know my place here anymore." And that sentence hurts like a bitch to hear. It's sad because honestly, Mike can relate. He's been in Hawkins this whole damn time and he's not quite sure of his place anymore. But Will has always been one of the best parts of living in Hawkins. It's like, Hawkins isn't Hawkins. Not without Will. Of course Will has a place here. He will always have a place in Hawkins. Here, with Mike. That twisted knot inside Mike's stomach makes a reappearance, and he swallows the lump in his throat. "You'll always have a place in Hawkins," he says fiercely. "Always." Will turns to face him, and in the dim, flickering porch light, Mike notices that his eyes are a bit distant. "Really?" he asks, his voice unusually cold. "Is that why we're not friends anymore, Mike?" The words are like a punch to the gut. "What?" Mike blinks. "Will, what are you talking about? Of course we're friends. Best friends." "Oh, really?" Will sneers. His expression is unusually harsh and so unlike Will, and the knot in Mike's stomach twists even more painfully. "Because I thought that friends don't lie, Mike. But it turns out you've been lying to me, to all of us, this whole time." "That's not true," Mike protests. "Will, what the hell are you talking about? I haven't lied to you." Will just laughs. He stands to his feet and walks down the steps that he's standing directly in front of Mike, and he pulls something out of his pocket. A letter, Mike realizes. The letter. "Wait, where do you—" "Will, it's Mike," Will reads, and Mike's heart plummets all the way to his stomach. A cold chill runs down his spine as Will continues to read the letter, Mike's letter, that he never had the guts to send to Will. The letter he had started all the way back in February and finished 2 days before leaving for California. One that, if Mike had been braver, he might have brought with him to give to Will as an apology or an explanation or something. The letter where he finally admitted the truth to himself. That his love for Will isn't like his love for his other friends. No, the truth is that Mike Wheeler loves Will the way he should love Elle. And now, standing right in front of him and reading the words that should never see the light of day, words that Mike has struggled to write for the past several months, and words that could make or break the most important relationship in his life, are being read aloud to him by the one person he never wanted to share the words with. Mike feels like he might be sick. And honestly, the truth is I love you as more than a friend. Will sneers. He looks up to meet Mike's gaze, disgust written all over his face. I love you, like how people say I'm supposed to love girls, to love Elle. I love you like that, and it terrifies me, Will. And that's why—
Stop.
Mike croaks, and suddenly he's standing to his feet. His cheeks are burning, tears stinging his eyes, and his heart pounds inside his chest. Just stop, Will. I get it. I get it. Why do you think I never sent that to you? Why do you think I never told you the truth? Just shut up.
Oh, Mike.
Will crumples up the piece of paper and tosses it aside, taking a step towards Mike. He looks wholly unlike himself, angry and disgusted and betrayed.
You know what I think? I think you're a coward who lies to his friends. You're a hypocrite who preaches about what good friends should do and how friends don't lie, when in reality, you hide yourself from your friends instead of just facing them. You pretend to be the leader, the one who brings us all together, but in reality, you're just a scared, pathetic little boy.
It dawns on Mike in that moment, as Will's voice deepens and becomes more gravelly, just what is happening.
Fuck,
Mike swears, and his fight-or-flight instinct kicks in. So Mike turns away from Will, no, from Vecna, and he runs like hell.
Oh, Michael,
comes Vecna's voice, still somewhat mixed in with Will's.
There's no point in running. It is time for you to join me.
Fuck no, Mike thinks to himself, but he doesn't look back. Instead, he runs as fast as he can, doing his best to avoid tree roots and anything else that might trip him up. It's pitch black all around him, and Mike can barely see what's in front of him. He has no idea where he's going or how he's going to get out of here. Behind him, he can hear the rustling of the wind and the crunch of the leaves as that thing disguised as Will follows after him. The faint tick-tock, tick-tock that has haunted his dreams becomes clearer and clearer, and Mike just continues to run. He runs until the world around him morphs into a reddish, thundering hellscape, no doubt the Creel house that Max had found herself in during her own encounter with Vecna. Mike's not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, considering this is Vecna's home turf now, and—
You shouldn't be here, Mike,
a familiar voice says from behind him, and Mike tenses, stopping in his tracks.
You're not Will,
he whispers, but he can't help but turn to look behind him. Sure enough, Will Byers stands a few feet away, peering curiously at Mike.
Stay away! Get the fuck away from me! You don't want that.
Will, Vecna, says gently. He takes a step towards Mike.
You want this. Us, Mike. You don't have to keep pretending or hiding. We can have this.
Just shut up! Mike snaps, and he turns back around, moving to take a step away from Vecna. But before he can, a vine shoots out, quick as lightning, and entangles itself around Mike's ankle. The vine pulls him right towards Vecna, who merely glances at him under the guise of Will Byers' warm hazel eyes.
It's time, Mike,
he says calmly.
Time for you to join me.
No! No, let me go!
Shit, let me go!
Mike screams, and he struggles harder as the vine pulls him back, locking him into place against one of the dark columns. Immediately, other vines latch onto him, wrapping themselves up his arms and torso and around his neck.
Poor Mike Wheeler,
Vecna whispers, though it's Will's voice that comes out. The vines pull at Mike's throat and he retches, struggling weakly to no avail.
All alone, pretending like everything's all right when, in reality, you've spent months absolutely miserable and afraid. Hiding from yourself and hiding from others. No wonder your friends won't help you. You deserve this.
The vines tighten around Mike once more, and Vecna smirks, his appearance shifting from Will to his true form.
After all, you broke the party's number one rule,
Vecna mocks.
Friends don't lie.
It dawns on Mike, then, that This is it. He has no clue when reality stopped and his visions began. For all he knows, Will never followed him outside. It was always Vecna. No one will know that Mike has been cursed. No one will come to save him. No. He will die a gruesome, horrific death. All alone. Yes. Vecna agrees, as if he can somehow read Mike's thoughts. Honestly, he probably can, which explains how he knew of Mike's letter to Will.
You will die here, Mike. Alone. Just like you have been for months now. It's what you deserve, and no one will miss you when you're gone.
The vines tighten around Mike's neck, and he retches, still struggling as best he can to no avail. Vecna's large clawed hand descends over Mike's face, and he watches in horror as the monster tilts his head up, eyes rolled to the back of his head.
This is it, Mike thinks to himself,
and he shuts his eyes, unable to fight the tears slipping out.
There are so many things he wishes he had done, so many things he should have said instead of hiding from his family and his friends and from himself.
I'm sorry, he thinks, though he doesn't know why. No one can hear him. No one will ever know how sorry he is. No one will ever know what he should have told him. No, Mike Wheeler will die here in the Upside Down and...
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Mike opens his eyes. There. There, several feet away from where Vecna has him trapped, is his way out. His way back to the real world. And there, in the real world, are all his friends. Max and Lucas and Dustin and Elle and Nancy and Will. His body is floating high above his friends, higher than even the roof of Hopper's cabin. But his friends are relentless. Every single one of them is screaming his name, and despite how dizzy and weak Mike feels, he's certain he can hear all of them. Their screams mix in with the familiar chords of Will Byers' favorite song. Of Mike's favorite song. Mike closes his eyes again. He's so tired, and his limbs feel like jelly. It would be far, far too easy to just give in and give up. After all, has he even been living these past few months? He hasn't felt like himself in months, so is there even any point in trying to fight it?
Mike, please!
Someone, Will, he thinks, screams. The person sounds like they're crying, but the sounds are becoming more fuzzy. The words all blend together, but it sounds like the person is begging him to come back. To stay. A warm feeling washes over Mike. He thinks about all the moments spent down in his basement, laughing with his closest friends and watching the newest Star Wars movies or completing another D&D campaign. He thinks about the late-night conversations he and Nancy have had on more than one occasion, talking about everything from the Demogorgon and the Upside Down to Nancy's relationship with Jonathan to how the two of them will always have each other's backs. He thinks of Snowball Dance and holding Elle close, unable to even fully comprehend the emotions he felt for her in that moment. He thinks about how happy it had made him to see Lucas and Max smiling at one another, to see Nancy pull Dustin into a dance so he wouldn't feel left out, to see Will safe and healthy and happy again. He thinks about a playground, a swing set with a little boy with brown hair and a silly bowl cut all alone. He thinks about a question. Hi, I'm Mike. Do you want to be my friend? That ended up being the best thing Mike has ever done.
Well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Mike opens his eyes. Somewhere, somehow, he manages to free one of his hands and he rips at one of the vines attached to Vecna's body, just like Max said she had done. It's enough to startle the monster, and he recoils away from Mike, momentarily stunned. The vines loosen around Mike, and he drops to the ground. There's no time to waste. Mike scrambles to his feet, and he runs. The music is still being blasted, and it sounds even louder the closer that Mike gets to the real world. Up close, he can see his friends more clearly. They're frantic, desperate, afraid. Nancy is sobbing and screaming up at him. Elle is desperately trying to use her powers to do something, anything to save him. And Will? Will's almost unrecognizable. He's standing most directly below Mike and screaming himself hoarse, and in the back of his mind, Mike can't help but think back to when their roles were reversed, and Will was the one being possessed by some evil from the Upside Down. there are tears streaming down his best friend's face, and he's screaming, begging Mike to come back. I'm coming, Mike thinks, and he doesn't dare look back at Vecna to see why the monster isn't chasing him. I'm not going anywhere. He's almost to the portal now, almost free, when he hears Vecna one last time. Vecna doesn't sound like he's behind Mike. No, much like Mike's nightmares and visions, it's as if Vecna's inside his mind once more. His words send a chill down Mike's back.
This isn't the end, Mike,
Vecna whispers, his voice low and gravelly.
Tell Eleven that one is coming for her.
Mike makes it to the portal at the exact moment Vecna gives his final threat, and all at once, the hellish red landscape disappears. There's a moment where everything is black. Then, Mike opens his eyes, and he gasps roughly, trying to get a bearing of his surroundings. The next thing he knows, he's crashing back down to the ground and landing on someone with a pained yelp. Shit, Mike curses, scrambling to sit up and look around. His heart is pounding inside his chest, and he can't stop shaking. Gone is the terrifying image of the upside down, and in its place is home. He made it. He's alive. The person he's fallen on, Will, because of course it's Will, sits up too, and Mike turns, meeting his best friend's eyes. Mike, Will gasps, and the next thing Mike knows, Will's arms are around him, squeezing him tightly. You're okay. You're alive. You're okay. The others quickly run up to the two of them, but Mike pays them no attention. Instead, he folds entirely into Will's embrace, allowing himself to just be held and to be here. He's safe, for now at least. He's alive. He's here with Will and with Elle and with Nancy and all of his friends.
Poor Mike Wheeler,
Vecna's voice echoes through his mind.
All alone, pretending like everything's all right when, in reality, you've spent months absolutely miserable and afraid, hiding from yourself and hiding from others.
No more, Mike thinks to himself, and he buries his head into Will's shoulder, breaking down into quiet sobs. No more hiding. April 7th, 1986. They win. Again. Except it doesn't really feel like they've won, even though somehow they've lived to see another day. No, it feels more like the calm before a storm. Something else is coming, and they all know it. There are too many unanswered questions, too many things that just don't make sense, too many unknowns for this to be over. It's never over, Mike thinks to himself, and he's not even surprised at how damn bitter he sounds. Mike's no fool. He may be young, but he's no fool, and he's not going to let himself get lulled back into a false sense of security like he has the past 3 years. It's not over yet. Something worse, far worse than the Demogorgons and the Mind Flayer and even Vecna, is coming. None of them know when or how or what is coming, but no one can deny the truth. And so, even days after Vecna's gone, with his body dissipating into something like ash in the Upside Down after a gruesome battle with Elle, the remnants of Vecna's curse still remain. The nightmares don't stop, except now they're not being caused by some psychotic mutant monster thing. No, they're simply caused by Mike's own twisted, fucked-up brain trying to process all the shit he's lived through. Mike feels a bit silly, waking up in the middle of the night with tears in his eyes and a terrifying inability to breathe, but he's not the only one. It's evident by the dark circles still etched under Max's eyes. All it takes is one look at each other, and Mike's certain both of them just know. Both of them know that they are both still being haunted by Vecna, and haunted by their own memories. He sees it in Nancy, too, and oddly, it's a bit comforting. One night, just mere days after Elle's defeat of Vecna, Mike had stumbled to their kitchen after a particularly awful nightmare. It had been far too late at night for Mike to call anyone, but fuck it, he was past the point of caring. He needed to speak to someone, to Elle, Will, Max, anyone who would listen and maybe understand. To his surprise, he had found Nancy leaning up against the wall and speaking in hushed tones to someone. Jonathan, probably. It had dawned on him in that moment that Mike wasn't the only person in his family who'd suffered under Vecna's curse. Nancy, too, had been one of the monster's unfortunate victims, and clearly she was struggling as much as he was. And so Mike had left the kitchen before Nancy could even notice he was there. The road to healing and being well again is a long one. Mike knows this, both from watching his friends battle their own demons and from his own personal struggles. He knows that the effects of Vecna's curse will not so easily disappear. And more than that, Mike knows that he has not been well for a long time. For months before Vecna even targeted him, he hadn't felt like himself. He'd been lying to himself, to his family, to his friends, to his girlfriend, and it had made him miserable. No more hiding, Mike had promised himself, once he'd managed to make it out of Vecna's trance alive. It's a promise he intends to keep. He starts small. He owes Elle an explanation at the very least, and so the two of them sit down when everything is all said and done. She's not doing well either, and Mike hates knowing that he's going to hurt her even more. But putting this off any longer will only hurt them both, and Mike cares too much for Eleven to do that to her. They break up. Officially, and for good this time. He doesn't tell her the full truth as to why, but he thinks Elle might suspect anyways. Regardless, they part on good terms, affirming their friendship and genuine care for one another. Within a week of Vecna's defeat, Mike's 15th birthday rolls around, and his mom, now fully caught up on the mess of the whole upside down and the shit her children have been through, asks if he's up for doing anything with his friends. Mike declines. After all, his birthday falls on a Monday, and he's really not in the mood to celebrate with a big group of people. He does, however, ask if Will can come over and spend the night, even if it is a school night. The Byers and Hopper have been temporarily housed in a house on the edge of Hawkins, with plans to permanently move back to Hawkins. Mike's never been more grateful for anything in his life. Naturally, his mom agrees, and Mike gets to work. He has a plan, and only a couple days to put it all together. He extends the invitation to Will, who gladly accepts, and he goes to the store with his mom that Sunday to pick up all of his and Will's favorite snacks, and even a couple decorations. After all, Will and Mike's birthdays are close enough together that they've celebrated almost every birthday together, and just split the week's difference. Mike decides that 15 shouldn't be any different, even if they are a little late. School comes and goes on Monday, and it's really not that bad. Eddie and the other members of the Hellfire Club obnoxiously sing happy birthday to him at lunchtime, and Dustin, Lucas, and Max present their joint gift of the newest version of the X-Men comics to him. They're trying, just like Mike is trying. By the time Nancy drives them home that afternoon, Mike feels like an anxious mess, and he can't stop tapping his foot against the bottom of Nancy's car. "Mike," Nancy says, her tone exasperated, "cut it out." "Sorry." Mike rolls his eyes. "Just got a lot of pent-up energy." Nancy doesn't look convinced, and when the light turns red, she turns to look at him. "Are you okay?" she asks, raising an eyebrow. You've been quiet, even before everything happened. And then just with Vecna going after you, I didn't know." His sister's voice trails off, and Mike offers her a sad smile. "Not really," he admits. "Just like you, I'm guessing?" Nancy winces. "Yeah," she agrees. "Me either." "Maybe," Mike hesitates. "Maybe we could talk about it. Later, I mean. It's a little depressing talking about this shit on my birthday." This earns him a laugh from his older sister, and she rolls her eyes fondly. "I like that idea," Nancy says softly. "And you know I'm always here for you, Mike, right?" Mike nods. "Yeah," he says, his voice quiet. "I do. And I'm here for you too, Nance, no matter what." Nancy just smiles, and though neither of them say it aloud, their "I love you" does not go unsaid. They spend the rest of the ride back to their house in silence, and finally, Nancy pulls into the driveway behind their dad's car. "Looks like Will might already be here," she comments, glancing at their open front door. "I swear, if Mom let him down to the basement," Mike mutters, and he grabs his backpack, stomping to the house. "I swear." "Mom's not gonna ruin your surprise," Nancy says, rolling her eyes. "Relax." Mike says nothing in return, and he opens the door, holding it open just long enough for Nancy to follow him inside. Sure enough, Will is in the kitchen with their mom, and Mike breathes a sigh of relief. Oh, there's the birthday boy, Mike's mom says brightly, pulling him into a hug. Will and I were just catching up about his time in California. Mike gives his best friend an apologetic look. Sorry for leaving you with her, and Will just chuckles. Hey, Mike, he greets. And hi, Nancy. Hey, Will, Nancy waves, opening up the cupboard and grabbing a glass. Mom, do you mind if I go over to see Jonathan tonight? I'm all cut up on homework. Sure thing, sweetheart, Mike's mom replies, and then she turns to both Mike and Will. All right, Mike, I'll go ahead and order a pizza for you two. All the other snacks are downstairs in the basement, so just holler if you two need anything, okay? Thanks, Mom, Mike says, and he exchanges a smile, a real one, not one of those forced ones he's given her over the past few months, with his mom. Then he motions for Will to follow him downstairs. Dude, sorry for leaving you alone with her. It's all good, Will laughs, his eyes crinkling ever so slightly. Something inside Mike's chest flutters, and his cheeks suddenly feel very warm. It was nice to see your mom again and catch up. You know, when we're not all getting shot at by the military or swarmed by demo bats. Mike snorts, walking quickly down the steps, and he glances behind him at Will. Yeah, no kidding, he agrees. Happy birthday, by the way, Will adds. He smiles again, a bit shyer this time. I have something for you. It can wait until later, though, unless you want it now. Later works, Mike says softly, pausing on the last step. He hopes Will can't see behind him, otherwise the surprise will be ruined. I actually have something for you first. Will gives him a quizzical look, and Mike just grins, moving out of the way and allowing him into the basement. Thanks to his mom's help, the entire basement is decorated for a birthday party, complete with balloons and bright streamers and a cheesy banner. Happy belated birthday, Mike says, and he turns around, meeting Will's eyes. I figured we could celebrate both our birthdays, like we used to as kids. The shock on Will's face melts away into a fond sort of softness, and he looks back at Mike, beaming from ear to ear. Mike. I've been a really shitty friend this year, Mike blurts out. His cheeks feel even warmer than before, and he walks into the basement, throwing his backpack down on the floor. And I just want you to know how sorry I am, and, he hesitates and reaches into his backpack, awkwardly pulling out the card and poorly wrapped gift he'd never gotten around to giving Will. Here, Mike whispers. It might be easier for you to just read this. Will blinks, and though he looks confused, he takes the letter, opening up the envelope and starting to read it. There's probably a few dozen different versions of this letter, all stuffed into the drawer of Mike's desk upstairs, and all full of the words he never thought he'd have the courage to say. It's taken him far too long to write this letter to Will, and he's probably read it 100 different times by now. He has every single word memorized. Dear Will, it's me, Mike, but, you definitely knew that already. This letter, it's taken me a long time to write. Honestly, I've been trying for months to write something to you, just like I'd done for Elle, but I could never find the right words to say. First, I just want to say that I'm sorry. I've been a terrible friend this year, and there's no excuse for it. You didn't deserve the way I've treated you, or all the really terrible things that I said to you, or how I've ignored you for months on end. I'm sorry, Will. I really, really am. And even though nothing I can do or say will make this okay, I feel like I owe you an explanation, at least. The thing is, you're the most important person in the world to me, Will. You're the person who knows me best. The person who's always been there for me. The person who gets me in a way that no one else does. And that's honestly really terrifying. These past few months have been not good, to say the least. I won't pretend that I've gone through as much as you have, or as much as Elle has, or even as much as Max has, but everything that's happened has fucked me up.
I think I've been pretending like I was all right, and I think I was able to because you were around. But then, when you left, it was like something was just missing. I didn't really know what to do with myself, or who I was, or who I wanted to be. I was angry and really confused, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I wanted to talk to you. God, I wanted to talk to you. I have a few dozen letters upstairs that prove that, but I could never quite figure out what to say or how to say what I was feeling. It took me a long time to realize it, and an even longer time to accept it. It was a lot easier to keep hiding from everyone and keep lying and pretending that things were fine. If I didn't let myself or anyone else see the truth, things would be fine. Things would go back to normal eventually. I would go back to normal eventually and feel like myself again. Obviously, that didn't work. And surprise, it took a freaking demon monster from the Upside Down to show me that hiding wasn't working. So, here's the truth. The truth is, I love you. Like, the way I was supposed to love Elle, because she was my girlfriend. The way I'm supposed to love girls, and only girls. Or at least that's what everyone at Hawkins says. I love you like that, and I think I have for a long time. I'm not telling you this because I'm expecting anything to come out of it. I don't know if you feel the same way, or if you're like me. And besides, after dating Elle and hiding this for so long, I probably just need time to figure out my own shit before dragging anyone else into it. But I had to let you know. I had to tell you the truth. You mean the world to me, Will. And you always will. Whether it's romantically or platonically, you are the most important person in my life, and I'm done hiding and pretending like that's not true. So, yeah. That's all I had to say. Love, Mike. P.S. Happy belated birthday. I hope you enjoy the mixtape. I meant to give it to you on your birthday, but things just got out of hand and went to shit really quickly. So I hope this party sort of makes up for it, too.
What feels like an eternity drags on before Will finally looks up at Mike. There are tears shining in his eyes and a soft look on his face.
Mike, Will says softly.
Mike just gives him an awkward smile before glancing down. I understand if this makes things weird, he says quickly. But if you're not, if you don't, I won't be upset, I swear. I want you in my life one way or another. You're my best friend in the whole world, and I...
Suddenly, Will's lips are on his, and the only thought going through Mike's head is, holy shit.
Sorry, Will says, pulling away quickly. His eyes are wide, but there's a bright red blush on his cheeks.
I know you said you need time to figure things out before dating someone else, but, I do feel the same way, and,
Will swallows the lump in his throat. His cheeks somehow redden even more.
I'm gay, he says quietly. I haven't told anyone else, but I've actually been wanting to, and,
He clears his throat again, reaching into his duffel bag and pulling out the all-too-familiar rolled-up painting from their road trip to California.
I made this for you, Will says softly, a shy smile on his face. Happy birthday.
Mike stares at the painting, then at Will, and with a hesitant smile he takes it, unraveling the paper. And there, in front of him, is a scene that Mike remembers, clear as day. It's a painting of the swing set, the very same one still at Hawkins Elementary School, and there are two little boys, Mike and Will, on the swings, smiling at one another like they don't have a care in the world. And on the bottom of the painting, Mike sees these words.
To Mike. Saying yes was the best thing I've ever done. Love,
Will.
I love you too,
Will says quietly, and Mike looks up, meeting his best friend's eyes. There are tears glistening in Will's eyes, and he gives Mike another shy smile.
And if you're not ready right now, then I'm okay with waiting for however long you need. I'm not going anywhere unless you tell me to.
Never, Mike whispers, and there's no denying the butterflies in his stomach or the complete sense of relief in his heart. He takes a step towards Will, smiling shyly.
I don't want you to go anywhere. I want you here, with me, for as long as you'll stay.
Will's eyes crinkle as he smiles again, and he steps forward too. There's barely any room left between them, and he leans his forehead against Mike's. Neither one of them move to kiss, but the moment doesn't feel any less intimate.
I'm not going anywhere, Will says, his voice soft and gentle. I'm here for as long as you want me.
Forever, Mike thinks to himself, but he doesn't say it out loud. Instead, he just smiles back at Will and pulls him into a hug, relishing in the closeness of their embrace. Somehow, Mike gets the feeling that Will knows exactly what he's trying to say.
Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me. Indecision may molest us. If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
Split. Author's notes. A few things. Number one, I'm operating under the assumption that Vecna's powers are limited to people in Hawkins, and that's why there's a longer period of time between Mike's visions and his run-in with Vecna. While he's in California and traveling, the curse doesn't affect him, hence why the nightmares don't occur, but then once he's back in Hawkins, he's vulnerable again to Vecna's curse. Two, it's sort of implied, but to clarify, Nancy is who figured out Mike's favorite song when he was Vecna'd. I imagine they tried a few different ones, with Will and an L especially getting more desperate, but Nancy grabs the cassette set aside for Will and puts it into the Walkman for Mike. 3. I wanted to dig a bit deeper with Mike and not just make his Vecna arc related to his internalized homophobia, but the greater theme of Mike not knowing what to do now that so much has changed so quickly. He's a 15-year-old kid who has experienced a lot of horrific shit, and by the end of Stranger Things 3, the two closest people in his life are now gone. I know I tend to shut down and get to a more resentful, angry mindset when I'm actually sad or afraid, and I felt like that reaction fit Mike too. 4. If this story were inspired by any other song, it would be The Archer by Taylor Swift. Like, I had that song on repeat while finishing this story. But hey, I like to keep the titles of my stories themed with something, and my Stranger Things stories are all to be 80s song lyrics. 5. I left the ending a bit ambiguous in terms of Mike and Will's actual relationship for the simple fact that they're two traumatized children who don't need to jump right into a relationship. I like to think they both work on themselves while still remaining close and knowing the feelings are there before getting into a relationship when they're maybe 17 or so. Anyways, leave a comment or kudos below if you enjoyed this fic, and you can find Andy Ride or Die at the links I have in the notes below. Furthermore, Podficker's notes, I really like this fic because I am a believer. I'm so sorry, guys. I am a Love Mike from Mike believer truther, and I fully support that if Mike wrote letters to Will, he would sign that shit with Love Mike, and I'm not even sorry. I'm right. So anyway, this is one of the first fics that I read that explored the Mike writes letters that he doesn't send to Will whole theme. And I really like the way that Andy goes about this one because I think that it just, like, I think that the Mike characterization is really well done and accurate. And then I really like Mike also getting Vecna'd, which is something that I am a truther for as well. I mean, I know that, like, literally season 4 already happened, but, like, it would have been so fucking good if Mike had gotten Vecna'd, guys. Anyway, not that that, I know that it didn't happen, but anyway. Mike having to go through trauma. Bad. But Mike having to go through trauma and learning from it. That's the shit right there. And that's what this fic does, and does really well, I think. I think Andy really has a point about Mike and Will both being, like, traumatized 15-year-olds. Believe me, when I was 15, I literally said when I was 15, I do not need to be in a relationship right now because I'm a mess, and I don't want to inflict that upon anybody else. And you want to know what? I was right for saying it. I wasn't even going through the horrors, and I was saying it, guys. So, no, but I think that them vibing, being there. I really like the letter that Mike writes to Will. I know it took him 6 business months to write the letter, but he got it done, guys. Honestly, wait, no, like 9 business months, because they left in, oh my god, Mike, almost more than 9 months. Anyway, however long it took his ass to write that letter, it took him a while, but he got it done. He gave it to Will. He said happy birthday. He apologized. He's getting over himself. There are horrors still to come, but, you know, they're getting through it. And, you know, it's just a good note to end the fic on. So I really enjoyed this fic, hence the podficking. Let me know what you think. And I tried to do the little sound effects. I literally have a pencil on paper, and I was scratching that shit right next to my mic while I was doing my letter narration. And that was kind of fun to think about for me, being like, hey, how do I make these letters different from the normal narration? And then I was like, ooh, I kind of want this, like, pencil, like, scratchy sound in the background. And then trying to, like, because there was a lot, like, punctuation marks I have in there. There's a couple phrases that are underlined, so I had to, like, underline those phrases. And then there's a couple letters in the beginning where Mike is, like, writing stuff and then crossing it out and then, like, throwing away the whole letter. So I got to do some, like, cool sound effects with that, which was really fun. Yeah, these podfickers notes are way too long. I'm so sorry. I'm going to edit these down by 1/3. You can find me and Andy, etc., everything you need to in the notes below. And I hope that you enjoyed this podfic. As always, comment, kudos. Rec me more biographics that you would like to see a podfic for in the comments below. And I will see you in the next one. Bye.